Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the ultimate glass ceiling has still not been broken, at least here in the United States. But my next guest from across the pond is doing all she can to add to the cracks and help women break into the boys' clubs in the worlds of business and finance. Helena Morrissey was the CEO of Newton Investment Management and is now the head of personal investing at Legal & General Investment Management. She's also the founder of the 30% Club, an initiative that aims to achieve better gender balance on company boards in the UK. She was made a, quote, dame for this, as they call it over there, in 2017. And Helena Morrissey is now the author of a new book called A Good Time to Be a Girl, Don't Lean In, Change the System. Ms. Morrissey, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
That subtitle, Don't Lean In, Change the System, sounds like you're talking back to Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, and that you're saying, don't focus on your individual career, focus on politics. How should I read it?
Well, it's more that I feel that if we lean in, then in a way we are both putting the onus on women to change things, to forge ahead in their own careers. And obviously we have to take some responsibility, but it shouldn't be all down to us. But we're also in danger of perpetuating systems, ways of working that I don't think really work for anybody or many people today. So I think there's a danger, and I've seen this in my own career, in my first job, for a money management firm, which was very traditional. I did lean in. I worked all hours that I had, and I was passed over for promotion. And it was only later on that I realized there was only really merit in leaning in when one was working within a good culture. And I feel that we've been spending too much time focusing on what women need to do and not enough on changing the system, the way that we work. And then we have a big opportunity now with technology and some other big changes in the world today to see gender equality in through a different lens, place it in context of these other big changes.
You specify the years of age 28 through 40 as when women often fall behind men at work, whether they have children or not. Why those years?
Well, I've seen it again in colleagues that I've worked with and friends as well, that it's obviously a time of life that often coincides, but not always, with when women are having children. And it's a moment when so many women see their own careers diverge from their male colleagues. So often, I mean, we have been recently reporting on gender pay gaps in the UK. And if one looks at the data for younger women, before they kind of get to age 30, it's actually a slightly positive to their male colleagues. But then I think it's a series of often quite small deviations from how men are working that can end up resulting in a very big difference in the outcome for women. And I just think that from the listening to women, again, there's often things we can do to just change the context in which they're working. It's not talking about working less. It's talking about working in a smarter way.
And so, listeners, I want to put out a caller invitation that specifically, because of that aspect of the book, for women between age 28 and 40 who might have a story to tell that would be useful for other people to hear, or a question for my guest, Helena Morrissey, and the content of her new book, A Good Time to Be a Girl, Don't Lean In, Change the System. If you're between 28 and 40 with a story or a question, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As I said in the introduction, you founded something called the 30% Club, which encourages companies in the UK to have their boards comprised of at least 30% women. What's the current state, and why aren't you calling it the 50% Club?
Well, partly it was because when we started, there was only 12.5% of board directors in the top 100 UK companies were women. So 30% seemed quite a long way off. And again, it resonated with me as a moment when, you know, first 3 out of 10 of you in the room, then you just feel like another person and valued for your opinion or not, as the case may be. maybe. But if you're the only, the token, then I think it can put us off from contributing. But you're right. Ultimately, perhaps we should be going for half and half. These days, we've gone from that 12.5% to 28.9%, which is tortuously close. We're going to go up by 0.1s, I'm convinced, for many months to come. But I mean, that has been a big change since it was established in 2010, because before there'd been this glacial change. It had hardly budged at all for a number of years. So we have seen an attitude shift. It's now seen in the UK as more of a business issue than a women's issue. We have had a different system put in place around the recruitment of board directors.
And how would you describe how these all-male or male-dominated boards engage in groupthink? You use that word.
Well, I think the financial crisis of almost a decade ago was such a deafening wake-up call about the dangers of groupthink. I mean, I always cite the example of the Royal Bank of Scotland that had 18 members on its board and 17 were men, and many of them were from Scotland or from Edinburgh. It lacked diversity across a number of dimensions, and the regulators did cite groupthink as one of the likely causes of ultimately their failure. They made a big acquisition, ABN AMRO, and it proved to be a real disaster and led to the failure of the bank. So I think what you see in so many situations is that you get people who know each other socially. They perhaps have gone to the same schools. I mean, our old boys network, literally many of the men that I work with have been to the same school since they were about 8 or 9 years old. And it's often a very comfortable environment, but people don't challenge each other. They don't call out when they think somebody else might be wrong. They want to be part of the in-group. And I think ultimately that's very pernicious if you want to get the right results, if you want to really get the right answers.
Anne in Rumson, you're on WNYC with Helena Morrissey. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I am actually a physician that works in a relatively dominant male job, as an intensivist. However, my question is about my daughter. My daughter is 19 years old. She is in London right now, doing an internship at an asset management company. That's a secondary startup. And one of the conversations I've had with her is, how do you progress to in a male-dominant world and continue to be able to survive and grow as a young woman? And what advice would you give to young women that are now launching into these types of careers?
Well, it certainly resonates with me, your daughter's experience, because I was a young woman in an asset management firm 30 years ago. And I realize now, I mean, when I had my first child, age 25, I was passed over for promotion. I was working in an all-male team of 16 fixed income fund managers, and I didn't think my gender had anything to do with how far I could progress, but I was told in no uncertain terms that I hadn't got the promotion because there was some doubt over my commitment with a baby. Now, no one would say that now, and actually I learned through finding a better culture, finding a company in the same industry, but with a very different approach to diversity of thought and embracing the idea of having multiple perspectives and types of people, I found an environment where I could thrive. And I mean, one of the things I learned was that often the setbacks are not particularly personal. They are to do with the attitudes that may be quite hardened over many years. These days, I actually run something called I'm chairing something called the Diversity Project, which is specifically trying to improve dimensions of all sorts of diversity across the asset management industry. So I feel I should ask to look up your daughter and get her along and learn about her experiences, even as an intern, because we have still, even though I have really enjoy my career in asset management, still only 10% women fund managers in the UK. So we are amongst the worst, but attitudinally, I see great progress. And since I had that real setback in my first job, and I would encourage her, my advice is always, don't take it so personally, speak up if something happens to you, and actually try to turn your unusualness into an advantage. At one stage, all my competition for the types of money that I ran, the types of funds, they weren't just all men, but they were all men called Paul. So there was me and five Pauls that would show up at all the investment conferences or be shortlisted for awards. And I sometimes won those awards. And to this day, I'll never know it's because I was the only one that the judges could easily identify. But I'll take it. It helped me to stand out. And I think you kind of have to work it.
And hang on. We're going to take your contact information off the air for your daughter, if you want to give it, and take Helen Morrissey's invitation to you seriously to get in touch with your daughter over there. So if you want to share your contact information with our screener, just hang on and you can do that. You write in the book that we need, quote, a new feminine brand of power rather than just fitting awkwardly with the masculine concept. What are some of the basics of the feminine brand of power?
So this is a controversial issue, in some ways bizarrely so, I think, because I have seen, I have lots of children of my own. I have six girls and three boys, and I feel I have enough of a sample size, as it were, to be quite confident that there are slightly different characteristics around behaviors. Not intelligence, of course. I'm not saying one is better or worse than the other, but the genders, I find women leaders are often quite empathetic the way that we work. We like to build a consensus. We like to draw people along with us and to listen. And again, I'm not generalizing completely. I know that there are wonderful men who have all those characteristics, but I think that I have brought a different style of leadership, certainly not a command and control style of leadership, not a dictatorial style, to the roles that I have done. And I see peers, women who I know, being similar. And I think we should encourage that rather than say, actually, to succeed, we women have to be honorary men.
Jenny in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Helena Morrissey. Hi.
Hi there. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share, I was somebody who had worked really hard in my career and had climbed the ladder, so to speak. After I had a baby, I just couldn't imagine continuing to work the hours that I was working. And I was unable to really find a good fit for myself in terms of trying to strike that balance. So I just quit my job and kind of jumped off a cliff, but got really lucky and was able to find, some part-time work that made me feel like I was finding a good balance. But I have given it a lot of thought about when I'm ready to go back to full-time work and have wondered, because I've heard a lot of stories, that it's really difficult to get back to where you were when you left. And I'm just wondering if your guest has, any insight in that or any thoughts that she can share about women who leave and try to come back at full force and get that same level of job and salary.
Well, I think I applaud what you're thinking about, because I think, I'm certainly not saying that taking time to look after a baby is in any way, not something that women should do. But we are giving up on a lot of high-performing women by not allowing them or not facilitating a way back in, as you say, at the same level or even higher than they left. There are companies that do returnship programs. I don't know if you've looked into that, because one of the issues is often about just the mechanics and making sure that you can get back up to speed and with what you might have missed. Certainly within the fund management industry, in that project that I just mentioned, we have started a database of women, particularly women who want to get back to work, and matching them with companies that are very interested in building on the experience of people who might have taken a couple of years. So I think it's worth looking at that. I think having allies, having champions, having sponsors, people who will advocate for you, is incredibly important. So if you can find, if there isn't a returnship program that appeals, but if you could find somebody who's in work, who's prepared to vouch for you and really just help you get back in there, again, in all my experiences, both my own and other women's, I've seen that just having someone who will just, in a way, fight your corner for you before you get there and smooth things. It sounds like you could benefit from that as well.
And maybe relevant to Jenny's question, I see in the book that when you were CEO of Newton, the investment management firm, you offered an optional 4-day work week for anyone at the company. Seems unimaginable in a lot of corporate environments, but was that to any degree aimed at people who were parents of young children, and how did it work out?
Well, it's a great question, Brian, because actually it wasn't. It was aimed at, actually, at the time, Newton, which has since gone on to really grow and do well, had been a subject of an acquisition, and we had a little bit of doubt over us from clients, and I knew that the performance, investment performance was great, didn't want to cut back on staff, but instead asked for volunteers to work a four-day week. So this was a round, really, we were built for growth and we weren't growing. And to my surprise, as many men as women took it up, and certainly to the point where I left about 18 months ago, some of the most senior male fund managers were working a four-day week. And I asked clients, did they know, you know, was this okay? And when I told them this had been going on since 2002, they said, oh, well, great, carry on, because the results have been fabulous. And I asked a gentleman who was very senior, did he mind telling me what he did on the fifth day? And he said, you know, he walked, he thought, he took exercise, he really sort of, I suppose, paced himself. And actually, it made me think that, you know, having time to think, being able to make great judgments is so important. We don't allow anybody who's high, doing a high performing role often to have that space. So it almost should be compulsory. But what it did do as well was it meant that women in Jenny's position who were thinking of coming back to work and wanting to perhaps work a four-day week or even the 3 days didn't feel embarrassed to ask. It removed the stigma.
In our last 30 seconds, I normally wouldn't ask a professional woman about her children any more than I would ask a professional man, but you do have 9. So any lessons that you learn from your particularly large family that are applicable to everyone?
Well, my husband and I have shared the responsibilities around our family. He doesn't work outside the home. He was a financial journalist before. And actually, it showed me that by being a little bit bolder and not minding perhaps so much about what people might think, we can play to our own strengths. And you know, we have people ask me, are your children happy? And I say, well, most of them happy most of the time. I think we should settle for that when there are 9 of them. But it works. And actually, I think sometimes benefits the children to have a rather different upbringing. The benefit of having a dad who's at home and a mom who wants to be there whenever she can.
Helena Morrissey's new book is A Good Time to Be a Girl. Don't Lean In, Change the System. Thank you so much for giving us this time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.